Chapter 11. A Land of Deserts. Nicely while it is raining, corn plant, I am singing for you. Nicely while the water is streaming, vine plant, I am singing for you. From a song of the Acoma Pueblo Indians of New Mexico. Lesson 1. Focus. How can being able to get more of a resource affect an area's development? Main idea. Read to find out how bringing more water to the deserts of the Southwest has changed them. Vocabulary. Nomad. Cloudburst. Arroyo. Aqueduct. Migrant worker. Water changes deserts. Deserts cover large areas of the Southwest. Those deserts have rich deposits of minerals. Often their soil is fertile. Before people could settle in deserts and use those natural resources, however, they first had to find a way to get enough water. But bringing water to deserts brought other changes, too. Changes long ago. At one time, the only people who lived in deserts were nomads. A nomad is a person who has no permanent home but keeps moving from place to place. The deserts were too dry for people to stay in one place and grow crops. Instead, when water or food ran out, they moved to another place. Over time, however, Indians in the Hohokam culture began to build settlements in the desert. They had learned that irrigation was the secret of living there. The Hohokam settled in the Sonoran Desert about 2,000 years ago. They built their homes in the valleys of the Gila and Salt Rivers near present-day Phoenix. Using only wooden sticks and poles, they dug miles of irrigation canals. The canals carried water to the Hohokam settlements and to hundreds of square miles of desert land. In fact, the canals carried water to nearly one-third of what is today the state of Arizona. In their irrigated fields, the Hohokam grew cotton, beans, squash, and corn. About 500 years ago, the Hohokam culture disappeared. No one knows why this happened, but their canals remained. Later, other Indian groups settled in the same area. Like the Hohokam, they used canals to carry water to their villages and fields. Review. How were the Hohokam able to build settlements in the desert? Water in the desert. Deserts are very dry places, but there are streams and even a few rivers. For much of the year, however, those streams and rivers have no water flowing in them. Water flows only when mountain snows melt in the spring or after it has rained. Most places in the desert receive rain only a few times a year. When it does rain, however, storms can be strong. Some places might get half of their yearly precipitation in just one cloudburst. A cloudburst is a sudden heavy rain. When a cloudburst happens, not all of the rain can soak into the hard, sun-baked desert ground. Instead, the runoff fills nearby streams and rivers. Some of the water races across the land, following the path of ancient arroyos. An arroyo is a deep, water-carved gully or ditch. Sometimes there is enough water to cause a powerful flash flood. Because a flash flood happens suddenly without warning, it can be very dangerous to people. In fact, more people are killed in deserts by flash floods than by thirst. A few low places in deserts almost always have water. They are often near rivers or natural springs. Such places are called waterholes. Many desert animals depend on waterholes for their water. Early desert travelers also depended on these places for water. They often camped or set up trading posts near waterholes. Review. When might you expect to see water in a desert stream or river? Geography. Hoover Dam. Hoover Dam is located in the Black Canyon of the Colorado River on the border of Arizona and Nevada, about 25 miles, 40 kilometers, from Las Vegas, Nevada. It is one of the world's highest concrete dams. Enough concrete to pave a two-lane highway from New York City to San Francisco, California, was used to build Hoover Dam. At its base, the dam is 660 feet, 201 meters thick. New sources of water. When Arizona's first senator spoke before Congress in the early 1900s, he said, "The baby state I represent has a great potential. All we need is water and some good people." Over time, many people moved to Arizona. The problem that remained was getting enough water. To meet the growing demand for water, people began to change the desert environment. They built dams across the few large rivers in the desert southwest. The dams formed reservoirs to supply water to the region's growing cities and for irrigation. Aqueducts carry the water to places where it is needed. An aqueduct is a large pipe or canal built to carry water. The largest of these dams is Hoover Dam. It was built across the Colorado River on the border between Arizona and Nevada. Hoover Dam is 1,244 feet, 379 meters long, and stands about as tall as a 54-story building. It provides electricity to cities in Arizona, Nevada, and California. Behind Hoover Dam lies Lake Mead, one of the world's largest reservoirs. People in the desert southwest also depend on wells for their water. Today's technology allows people to pump groundwater from deep beneath the Earth's surface, but there are problems with using groundwater. In moist climates, rain quickly replaces the groundwater that people pump out. In many desert areas, however, people use groundwater much faster than nature can put it back. In Arizona, groundwater was once being used twice as fast as it was being replaced. In the city of Tucson, in southeastern Arizona, groundwater was being used up even faster. The water levels in some Tucson wells dropped as much as 110 feet, 34 meters, in just 10 years. This heavy use of groundwater left empty spaces beneath the Earth's surface, and in some places, the land sank. A 120 square mile, 311 square kilometer area between Phoenix and Tucson sank more than 7 feet, 2 meters. In other places, large cracks appeared in the ground. To help people use less groundwater, the Central Arizona Project was built. It uses canals, tunnels, pumping stations, and pipelines to carry water from a reservoir on the Colorado River to places in the desert. The Central Arizona Project has brought more water to people who live and work in such desert cities as Phoenix and Tucson. Review: how do people in the desert southwest get most of their water? Using water in the desert. Having more water means that more people can live in and visit the desert southwest. Today, many places there are booming. Many cities and industries are growing rapidly. Water has made the desert southwest an important center of agriculture, too. Desert farms produce large amounts of cotton, lettuce, citrus fruits, and other crops. Many of those crops are harvested by migrant workers. A migrant worker is someone who moves from farm to farm with the seasons, harvesting crops. Making sure there is enough water to meet everyone's needs is still a problem, however. The laws that govern how people use water are being changed to try to better meet the growing demands. In Arizona, for example, 5 water management areas have been formed. Leaders in each area decide how much water cities and farms should use. By the year 2025, they want Arizonans to use no more groundwater than the amount that is put back by nature. Each water management area has also thought of ways to get people to conserve water. People are now being paid to put in toilets that use less water. Awards are given to people who use desert plants in their yards instead of grass that needs to be watered often. Are these working? One official says, "We're getting there." Review: why can more people live in and visit the desert southwest today? Lesson 1 review. Check understanding. 1. Remember the facts. What did the Hohokam learn was the secret to being able to build settlements in the desert? 2. Recall the main idea. How has bringing more water to the deserts of the southwest changed them? Think critically. 3. Explore viewpoints. John Wesley Powell, an early explorer of the Colorado River, said, "In the whole region, land as mere land is of no value. What is really valuable is the water privilege." What do you think he meant? 4. Link to you. What are some ways that you and members of your family might conserve water in your household? Show what you know. Poster activity. Suppose that you have been asked by the leaders of one of Arizona's 5 water management areas to design a poster. The purpose of the poster is to remind the people of Arizona of the importance of conserving water. Draw a poster that shows some of the ways people can conserve water. Then, display your poster in your classroom. Comparing viewpoints. Whose water is it? The Colorado River is the main source of water for much of Arizona and Nevada. Most of the river's water, however, goes to California. Years ago, California, Nevada, and Arizona agreed that each state would have a certain amount of water to use. Those amounts have not changed in more than 30 years. But the three states have changed a lot. Many more people now live there, and all the states are using more water. California was the first state to use more than its share of the river's water. When that happened, however, there was still plenty left. At that time, neither Arizona nor Nevada used all their water, so California was allowed to use much of the extra water. Arizona still does not use all of its share, but the Central Arizona Project has made it possible for the fast-growing state to do so. Nevada has grown very quickly, too. In fact, the desert city of Las Vegas is one of the fastest-growing cities in the United States. People in California worry about what will happen when there is no longer any extra water for them to use. Different ideas. Today, it is hard for people in the three states to agree on how water from the Colorado River should be shared. Californians know that they must use less water, but many people in California also think that less water should be kept in Lake Mead. Then, more water could be put into the river for people downstream to use. However, there would be less water saved up for times of drought. Some people in Nevada think that a three-state commission should be set up. Each of the three states would have one vote. Together, they would decide when extra water could be sold and at what cost. Patricia Mulroy works for the Southern Nevada Water Authority. She says that if Arizona, California, and Nevada cooperate, there will be enough water to meet any supply challenges that lie ahead. People in Arizona, however, worry that Nevada and California might vote to take away the extra water that now belongs to Arizona. Rita Pearson works for the Arizona Department of Water Resources. She says, Arizona cannot afford to permanently lose any of its entitlement, share, to out-of-state interests. Its Colorado River entitlement is the state's largest renewable water supply, and soon enough it will need every ounce of it. Arizona has started to bank its unused water to protect against future shortages. Through this water bank, Arizona can sell any extra water it has each year, but the state keeps its rights to all of its share of water from the Colorado River. Compare viewpoints. 1. Find Lake Mead on the map on page 366. Why do some people in California want to put more water from Lake Mead into the Colorado River? 2. Why does Patricia Mulroy say there should be a three-state commission? 3. What does Rita Pearson think about the idea of a three-state commission? How do you know? Think and apply. Think of another way for California, Nevada, and Arizona to meet their needs for more water. Then, on a sheet of paper, explain how that idea might affect the people in each of the three states. How do you think the people in each state might feel about your idea? Why? Lesson 2. Learn Geography Through Literature. Alejandro's Gift by Richard E. Albert. Illustrated by Sylvia Long. Many different animals live side by side in the same part of a desert. Like all other living things, they need water, but water is scarce in a desert. All the animals depend on the same source for their water. Often, that is a nearby waterhole. Read now about Alejandro, a man who lives alone in the desert. As you read, think about how Alejandro changes the desert and how the changes he makes affect both him and the desert environment. Alejandro's small adobe house stood beside a lonely desert road. Beside the house stood a well and a windmill to pump water from the well. Water for Alejandro and for his only companion, a burro. It was a lonely place, and Alejandro welcomed any who stopped by to refresh themselves at the well. But visitors were few, and after they left, Alejandro felt lonelier than before. To more easily endure the lonely hours, Alejandro planted a garden filled with carrots, beans, and large brown onions, tomatoes and corn, melons, squash, and small red peppers. Most mornings found Alejandro tending the garden, watching it grow. These were times he cherished, and he often stayed for hours, working until driven indoors by the desert heat. The days went by, one after another, with little change, until one morning, when there was an unexpected visitor. This visitor came not from the desert road, but from the desert itself. A ground squirrel crept from the underbrush. Moving warily over the sand, it hesitated and looked around. Alejandro paused, keeping very quiet, as the squirrel approached the garden. It ran up to one of the furrows, drank its fill of water, and scampered away. After it left, Alejandro realized that for those few moments, his loneliness had been all but forgotten. And because he felt less lonely, Alejandro found himself hoping the squirrel would come again. The squirrel did come again, from time to time bringing along small friends. Wood rats and pocket gophers. Jackrabbits, kangaroo rats, pocket mice. Birds, too, became aware of Alejandro's garden. Roadrunners, Gila woodpeckers, thrashers. Cactus wrens, sage sparrows, mourning doves, and others came in the evening to perch on the branches of a mesquite bush or to rest on the arms of a lone saguaro before dropping down for a quick drink before nightfall. Occasionally, even an old desert tortoise could be seen plodding toward the garden. Suddenly, Alejandro found that time was passing more quickly. He was rarely lonely. He had only to look up from his hoe, or from wherever he might be at any moment, to find a small friend nearby. For a while, this was all that mattered to Alejandro, but after a time, he wasn't so sure. He began asking himself if there was something more important than just making himself less lonely. It took Alejandro little time to see there was. He began to realize that his tiny desert friends came to his garden not for company, but for water, and he found himself thinking of the other animals in the desert, animals like the coyote and the desert gray fox, the bobcats, the skunks, the badgers, the long-nosed coatis, the peccaries, sometimes called javelinas, the short-tempered wild pigs of the desert, the antlered mule deer, the does, and the fawns. Finding enough water was not a problem. With his windmill and well, Alejandro could supply ample water for any and all. Getting it to those who needed it was something else. The something else, Alejandro decided, was a desert waterhole. Without delay, Alejandro started digging. It was tiring work, taking many days in the hot desert sun, but the thought of giving water to so many thirsty desert dwellers more than made up for the drudgery. And when it was filled, Alejandro was pleased with the gift he had made for his desert friends. Literature Review. 1. How did Alejandro change the desert? How did those changes affect both him and the desert environment? 2. Do you think you would get lonely if you lived alone in the desert? Why or why not? 3. Use encyclopedias and library books to find out more about the animals that came to visit Alejandro. Then, write a short report about one of the animals. Draw a picture to go with your report. Share your report with classmates. Lesson 3. Focus. How are cities in the desert Southwest similar to and different from other cities? Main idea. Read to compare and contrast the desert city of Tucson, Arizona, with other cities in the United States. Vocabulary. City manager. Budget. Municipal court. General election. Candidate. Ballot. Campaign. Tucson, desert city. Tucson lies in the Santa Cruz River Valley in the Sonoran Desert. While Tucson's desert location makes it special in some ways, the city has a lot in common with other cities in the United States. In fact, Tucson's buildings and streets look much like those in other large cities. One group of builders who visited the city reported that, with few exceptions, the buildings seem interchangeable with those in Rochester, New York, or Knoxville, Tennessee. A varied history. Like the Phoenix area, the land near present-day Tucson was first settled by the Hohokam. The Hohokam were likely the ancestors of the Tohono O'odham, an Indian group that lives in the Tucson area today. Tohono O'odham means desert people. Their reservation is the second largest one in the United States. Many different Indian groups live in the Tucson area. To show the importance of its Indian heritage, the city of Tucson asked a 100-year-old Hopi shaman to bless the new city hall when the building was finished. The first Spanish settlement in the Tucson area was the Mission San Javier del Bac. It was started in the late 1600s by a Spanish priest named Father Kino. Just 15 miles, 24 kilometers north of the mission, was a small Indian village. The Spanish spelled the Indian name for the village Tuquison. Father Kino described the land near Tuquison as the richest soil in the whole fertile Santa Cruz Valley. The Spanish later built a fort at the village, which eventually grew into the city of Tucson. Tucson came under Mexican rule after Mexico won its independence from Spain in 1821. Then, in 1853, Tucson became part of the United States. The United States bought the area where Tucson is located from Mexico following a war between the two countries. Tucson's Spanish and Mexican past is still an important part of the city's culture. Like old Spanish buildings, many new buildings and houses in Tucson have tile roofs. Some have thick adobe walls. Tucson even has a shopping area built to look like a Mexican village. As in other cities in the Southwest, many families in Tucson trace their roots to both Mexico and the United States, so people often celebrate the holidays of both countries. In fact, Mexican Independence Day is celebrated in Tucson with nearly the same excitement as the 4th of July. Each year on September 15th, mariachis, or Mexican street bands, and large crowds of people gather to celebrate Mexico's freedom from Spain. One person from Tucson described the festival. The mariachis play and sing, people dance. Many wear traditional Mexican costumes, and for one evening, Tucson looks and sounds much as it must have when it was a tiny walled presidio, fort. Another Mexican holiday celebrated in Tucson is Cinco de Mayo. In Spanish, Cinco de Mayo means 5th of May. On that day in 1862, a group of Mexicans defeated a large French army that had invaded Mexico. Review. Why do many people in Tucson celebrate the holidays of both Mexico and the United States? A modern desert city. At about the same time that Tucson became part of the United States, the city's climate began to change. No one is sure why, but the climate became much drier. The fertile lands near Tucson that Father Kino wrote about became desert. Because Tucson is a desert city, visitors see many things that they cannot see in cities in other parts of the country. For example, a number of mostly dry arroyos cut across the city. Cactuses and other desert plants, such as mesquites, grow beside them. One of the most popular places for any visitor to the city is the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. Part of this special museum is a zoo. It shows desert animals and plants in their natural surroundings. The people of Tucson are proud of their desert environment. Most try to adapt to the desert rather than change it. One way they do that is the way they landscape their yards. As in other desert cities, many people in Tucson do not grow grass in their yards. In fact, some neighborhoods do not even allow it. Instead, people use colored rocks and sand to make interesting designs in their yards. Tucson's climate is hot for much of the year, so many houses there have cooling systems. Many houses also have solar panels on their roofs. These panels use the sun's energy to heat water. Like other cities in the Southwest, Tucson has grown rapidly in recent years. In fact, the number of people living in the city grew by almost one-fourth between 1980 and 1990. Today, the Tucson metropolitan area has more than 760,000 people. Tucson has many of the same features as other large cities. It has busy streets and highways. It has a public transportation system that can take people all over the city. It has a central business district with tall buildings and a large convention center. Banks and shopping centers and a university, the University of Arizona, lie near the city's center. Tucson also faces many of the same problems as other large cities. Its schools are crowded, and sometimes there are not enough good jobs for all its people. The city has also had problems with crime and with air and water pollution. Review. What are some problems that Tucson shares with other cities? City government. Like other cities, Tucson has a city government. The city government works to solve Tucson's problems and to provide services to its people. The 6 members of the city council make the laws for Tucson. The mayor runs the council meetings and represents the city on special occasions. Together, the members of the city council and the mayor choose the city manager. A city manager is a person who is hired to run a city. The city manager hires city workers and oversees all the day-to-day operations of the city government. The city manager makes sure that all community services, such as the fire and police departments, are running smoothly. The city manager also prepares a yearly budget for the city. A budget is a plan for spending and saving money. Like Tucson, many other large cities in the United States have both a mayor and a city manager. Some cities, however, do not have a city manager. Instead, the mayor runs the city. Tucson City Council and mayor also choose judges to serve on the municipal or city court. A municipal court decides the cases of people accused of breaking city laws. These laws often have to do with traffic, parking, and other things important to the smooth working of a community. The mayor and the members of the city council are elected by the people of Tucson in a general election. A general election is an election in which the voters choose the people who will represent them in government. The people who are running for office in an election are called candidates. Usually there are 2 or more candidates for each office. So that voters can make a choice on election day, the names of all the candidates running for an office are listed on the ballot. A ballot is a sheet of paper or some other method used to mark a secret vote. Most candidates have campaigns to get people to vote for them. During a campaign, a candidate often runs advertisements on television, displays signs, makes speeches, and talks with voters. Review. Who chooses Tucson's city manager? Lesson 3 review. Check understanding. 1. Remember the facts. What is the difference between a city council, a city manager, and a mayor? 2. Recall the main idea. How is Tucson similar to, and how is it different from, other cities? Think critically. 3. Link to you. How is the government in your community like Tucson city government? How is it different? Show what you know. Art activity. Think about how some houses and yards in Tucson are different from those in other parts of the United States. Then, in an empty box turned on its side, make a diorama showing what a house and yard in Tucson might look like.